We take a look at a new study that deals with the death penalty in the United States, and it draws attention to the plight of inmates who are falsely convicted.
According to the study, 4% of all defendants who have been sentenced to death and who remain under threat of execution are probably innocent, about 1 in 25 inmates on death row.
Joining us now is Samuel Gross. He's a professor of law at the University of Michigan and the lead author of the study. Samuel, welcome to Central Time.
Good to be here.
Well, you found that 4% of all defendants who've been sentenced to death and who remain under the threat of execution are probably innocent. How did you get to that number?
Well, we started with the number of people who've been sentenced to death in the period we studied, which is 1973 through 2004, who had been exonerated, which gives you some idea of the number who might be innocent, but is not going to give you a full picture because some of those people who are innocent who might be exonerated won't have had enough time to get exonerated, and some people who are innocent will never be discovered. And the question is how to focus the analysis to get the best estimate of the underlying rate of innocence from the limited number of exonerations that we know about. And the way that you did a technique known as survival analysis enabled us to do two things. First, to control for the fact that not all of the defendants who'd been sentenced to death had been on death row long enough for the process of exoneration to work, because on average, those who were exonerated after being sentenced to death had served 10 years on death row before they were released. And second, to try to limit the fact that so many who had been sentenced to death were innocent weren't exonerated and probably never would be. And for that second purpose, we focused on those exonerations that took place while the defendants were under threat of execution, because the reason for the very high rate of exonerations among people sentenced to death is that our system is correctly geared to be very concerned about the possibility of executing innocent people. So we put huge amounts of time and effort into reexamining cases of people who might still be executed. But then if they're removed from death row and resentenced to life imprisonment, which ultimately happens to most people who are sentenced to death, then we lose interest. Then the resources aren't there, the courts don't pay attention, and very few people are exonerated after they're removed from death row. So the question was, could we devise a method of focusing in on the rate of exoneration that is generated by that very high level of scrutiny that's applied to defendants who might still be executed? And that's what we were able to do, and that gives us as good an estimate of the underlying rate of innocence as we can get, given our ability to detect innocence after the fact, which is what these exonerations do.
And in a system where you want 0% margin of error, you're talking about life or death here, 4% seems high. Is that a conservative number, or is that a number that you feel is right on the money?
Well, it's an estimate. So I don't think you can say it's right on the money. Like most estimates of this sort, what it means is that the rate is somewhere between something like 2.8% and 5.4% or something like that. 4% is the most likely number. But given that it's an estimate with the type of uncertainty around it that we see all the time and reports of opinion polls and things like that, I think it's a conservative estimate. That was our design, was to come up with a conservative estimate because of the nature of the issue. We didn't want to overstate what we could. And it is probably a conservative estimate because it doesn't take into account the exonerations that will never be found at the end of the day. Specifically, if people remain on death row for more than 21 years and are not exonerated in that entire period, they are a portion of those who are innocent that we do not account for.
As lead author of the study, what was your reaction when you hit that 4% estimate?
Well, I think this is a surprisingly high number. I wasn't surprised any time in the last few years. This study has taken a long time to complete, and we've been seeing the results sort of foreshadowed by earlier findings. But when I started working on this, which was about 15 years ago, I did not expect the rate to be anywhere near this high. I would have predicted 1% or 2%. I think it is a surprisingly high rate, yes.
Your study's gotten some criticism. People who have said that 4% is too high an estimate. You're saying conservative. Others are saying too high. And I want to read you a quote from a district attorney who spoke to the New York Times. And he said, "That is an astronomical figure. I would quit my job and become a Buddhist monk if it was one-fifth accurate." How do you respond to criticism like that?
Well, you should shave his head and buy a saffron robe. If it was one-fifth, if what he means by that is that he would quit his job if a fifth of the number of people who were exonerated that we know of were actually innocent, that's not even mildly controversial. Most of the cases we talk about are not cases in which there's any doubt about the innocence of the people who were exonerated. About 13% of them are DNA cases. In a whole bunch of others, the real killers have been identified, and many of them have been convicted. And then there are cases which are controversial, but there are cases that are controversial on the other side too. There are people who have been exonerated in many senses, but aren't on our list because they don't count as exonerated by our criteria. For example, a man in Texas by the name of Kerry Max Cook was sentenced to death not once but three times. While he was in prison, he was repeatedly raped and abused in ways that are really too depressing to even describe. Before his fourth death penalty trial, he was offered a deal to plead guilty to second-degree murder and be released because of the time he'd already served, which he took. And then about 3 months later, he was cleared by DNA testing that showed that he was not the person who committed the rape murder for which he'd been sentenced to death three times. He does not count as an exoneree for us because he pled guilty at the end of the day in order to go home. And there are several other people like that. Those are ones we know about, where the person is very likely innocent but not exonerated because either they were not released or they were released under a plea bargain that allowed them to go home but required them to plead guilty to a lesser offense. And then there are ones we don't know about. So, there are no doubt some people on the list who are guilty. We say that. On the other side, there are others that we don't list who are innocent. And as best we can tell, they no doubt outnumber the ones that are misclassified in the other direction. So Mr. Marquis is entitled to his opinions, but he's not entitled to his facts. He'd probably be more informative if he had read the study carefully before commenting on it, because we do address this question.
In light of the botched execution at the state of Oklahoma last week and the renewed national conversation around the death penalty and your study, what do you hope our justice system does with the findings of your study?
Well, the botched execution is very depressing, but deals with an entirely different issue. The rate of false convictions among death sentences has been known to be high for a long time. I had published an earlier study with Barbara O'Brien that comes up with not a reliable estimate the way this one does, but with a lower bound, a low estimate that the actual rate must exceed of 2.3%, because we had not yet developed this statistical method and applied it here. And that's already very high, and it's hard to see how it could be. It was hard for years to see how it could be anything other than higher than that. So that's a disturbing fact that should be taken into account in discussions of the death penalty. But I think the more important lesson from this study is not about the death penalty, but about false convictions in general. Most of the people who were sentenced to death but are innocent have not been exonerated and will not be executed. Most of them were people who were sentenced to life imprisonment in the first place, even though they were convicted of a capital crime, or people who were resentenced to life imprisonment after being sentenced to death and then basically forgotten about. And behind that, there is a much larger group of defendants who are convicted of murders but not capital murder or of other crimes who never get the sort of attention and never get the opportunity to be exonerated that is one of the ironic benefits, if you want to call it that, of being under sentence of death. And those numbers must be many times larger than what we see here, because death sentences are a tiny fraction of the number of people who are sentenced to prison in the United States, on the order of, you know, a hundredth of 1% of all prison sentences.
Samuel, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure.
Samuel Gross is a professor of law at the University of Michigan.